It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, a time where we welcome in Cynthia Hausmeister. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning.
And Janet Manco. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning. How is everybody?
Very good. It's a good thing I worked out this morning because the 95th Salisbury Ski Jump Fest is inserted in the Lakeville Journal this year, and it adds about a pound to the journal.
Oh, my gosh. If you see our drivers, please give them a pat on the back because it is not an easy week for them. We just had to have the snowstorm, too.
Yeah, well, anyways.
We're very happy to have it in there. The jumps are coming.
Yeah, I always look forward, and I think most people look forward to seeing this, because not only do they find out more about the jumps and all about the jumps, but you see the community commitment not only to the jumps itself, which all that money that helps support the Salisbury Winter Sports Association, but also that's one of the features I think that people look forward to that come out of the Lakeville Journal every year, to be quite honest with you. It's just a real important community function.
You know, this was a year where it could have really been in question whether or not they would go forward with the jumps. There was a lot of discussion about it, but they decided they could do it safely. You know, these folks who slide down those jumps can socially distance from each other and from the crowds. They will keep a control on the crowds, and it is so great to see that they're going forward. You see the activity that will be there in this program that's in the paper this week.
All right. I have to comment on the photo by Lance Christensen. Fur coats required.
I didn't want to say, look, they've got their shielding coats on, because I felt like that would be like saying, oh, look, burgers. But that is, in fact, beautiful local cattle. And Lance Christensen went out in the middle of the snowstorm and actually let us know what the roads were like, which was extremely treacherous. On Monday, and the storm, I would say, generally didn't turn out to be quite as bad as we expected, which is always good news. I would say the winds were strong, but not the 40-mile-per-hour gust that we were expecting, and I'd say we got about a foot of snow, which is pretty good, and then the snow continued this week, so we will probably have more snow pictures coming up.
Right.
We have Lonza's pictures.
It's that time of year. Well, let's go to, and this, you know, I've been waiting for this happening more and more and more, Patrick Sullivan's story on the housing meeting, that a large turnout crashed Zoom, because most places that are using Zoom are using the free Zoom, and there is a limit to what you can put, how many people can join in a Zoom meeting, and unfortunately, during a very important housing meeting, which a lot of people wanted to be part of, it happened there.
It's interesting, as we're coming into budget season, town meetings and budget meetings, where we talk about the millions of dollars that we're all going to pay in taxes to support our town and school services, generally I would say maybe get 10 or 15 people. So it's great to see this many people turning out for what's turned out to be a really lively conversation in our area towns about affordable housing. So there's this conversation going on in Salisbury. There's a similar one going on in Falls Village that we'll talk about as we get inside. But two different town organizations that are working toward possibly putting a sort of, a semi-apartment building in the historic district. A lot of strong feelings about it on both sides. And it's hard for me to imagine that they were going to use the free Zoom, though, because that's a 40-minute time limit. And I feel like any Zoom meeting that has more than two people, the first 20 minutes are spent saying, you're on mute, or, everybody turn your video on or off or whatever. So I assume that this is a slightly higher level of Zoom, but nonetheless, you couldn't take 100 people.
Yeah, I think everybody's learning as they go along, and I'm sure that towns on important meetings now, and when they set up Zoom meetings, they'll include some money in their budget, so if they have to, they can open it wide up. I mean, Zoom meetings now are far better than they were when they first started. Everybody has learned it more and more and more as you go along. And we found this out from all the libraries around here who now are having record turnouts for their Zoom meetings. I mean, bigger turnouts than they would have in the libraries themselves.
By a multitude. If you look at the article next to this article about the streaming, there was a Scoville Memorial Library in Salisbury had a guy who's also speaking at Kent Memorial Library about letting yourself free from the cable service and just using streaming services, and they had 187 people.
Yeah.
So that's I guess next time the library should host the affordable housing meeting. But the affordable housing meeting has been rescheduled for tonight at 7:30. So interesting to see how many people turn out for this one.
Affordable housing, it's something that the area is trying to deal with, and we'll obviously continue with that. But that is a great story about it's a version of cutting the cord, where sooner or later you're not going to need these big companies to bring internet into your area. Either towns can do it via fiber optic and supply their own, even though they become a public utility when they do that, or you've got all these different satellite options that are going to work, that are working. So this is a great story by Lila Hawken, and I like the sub-headline, just because you need cable, the company does not need to control you.
Right, and we tend to feel around here that we are a little bit controlled by the cable company, because it's not like there are a lot of options for either your cell service or your cable service. You kind of get whoever, you know, is willing to take on your property. And a lot of conversations, of course, at the state government level about these cable companies who promise to give cable to everybody and then kind of go like, oh, we can't do that. That's too expensive. So it's a very interesting push and pull. And as you said, a lot of towns are looking into getting their own fiber optic systems, which, you know, of course, will have their own challenges. But this guy's talk was about getting services like Roku, yep, or just ordering sort of a la carte, and how you can do that.
I've done that. I used to have an entertainment thing. I have managed to take off my Comcast bill, HBO, the Discovery Channel, all these movie channels, because I can get them very, very inexpensively, and my cable bill is down almost $120 a month.
That's real money, and it's not that we want to take money away from companies like HBO and Netflix that are, of course, paying for so much excellent television and movies that we're watching these days, but it gets really expensive if you've got, you know, BritBox and Acorn and MHZ and HBO and Netflix. It adds up.
You don't realize it until it's gone, and then you say, wow, this is pretty great. You know, we talk about Zoom meetings. The Region 1, once again, I'll credit the administration and the Board of Education. They put this calendar together very swiftly and very transparently by Zoom meeting and by having – I mean, they did a really great job with this. Normally, putting the calendar together is something where everybody likes to pull the hair out.
Oh, my gosh. My friend Dave was on the Cornwall Board of Education, and he said, oh, you know, we're going to have a conversation about the calendar. And I said, well, I'll see you in a couple months.
Yeah, I know.
You know, there's a lot of conversation between parents of children who are in the public schools versus parents of children who have some private school children, because the calendars are not synced up, and they often want them to be so they can take a family vacation. But Lisa Carter, very innovative thinking. And again, there are advantages to doing Zoom meetings as opposed to doing in-person meetings. So all of the members of the ABC and the Region 1, all the different boards, all met together on Zoom, discussed the basic concepts of the calendar. They left that Zoom meeting, went in and had their own Zoom meetings, and then came back to the Region 1, you know, larger group meeting with all the boards together, and handled it all, I think, in record-setting time.
Yep, absolutely. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Bravo.
They did a great job. And by the way, today there's a special meeting of the ABC on Lisa Carter's contract. So, and they hope it's going to be an executive meeting, but they hope to come up with a contract for her for the future.
We can all support giving her the best contract possible.
She's done a great job. Unbelievable job. Now, as we take a look at a couple of stories as we go to page A3, I like the story that the YMCA is like a lot of other businesses, and even though they're basically like a nonprofit, everybody has to reset to try to get people to come back in the manner they were before the pandemic.
Right, and we tend to think of the YMCA as being like, oh, well, they're part of a big national organization, yeah, but they're struggling, and we want to keep all of our local gyms in business, because at some point we're going to come out of this and we're all going to really need to shed a couple of, you know, hibernation quarantine pounds and get our, you know, you don't think about it, but when you're in the house all the time, you're not even doing sort of the basic level of walking around that you would do in normal life. So Lisa Duyard, who is really an extraordinary person and is running the Canaan YMCA, which is on the campus at Geer, has done a beautiful job keeping that gym really clean. And nationally, the YMCA is doing something called the Reset Challenge, and they're opening it up to people in the community, at least for the first few weeks, to try and get people to do a lot of their online classes. And there are, of course, still in-person classes, and you can make appointments to come in and use the equipment. But, you know, and a lot of our local gyms are doing online classes of different kinds. So good to look at it. But Hunter Lyle, nice story on the YMCA's challenge.
Now, Patrick Sullivan also does a nice story on an event that's happened over the past couple of weeks, and that is how you like to love or learn to like classical music. There were two different sessions on this that happened at the DM Hunt Library.
Right, and Warren Whitaker, you know, it's nice when people have these areas of expertise and they share it with people in the community. So the DM Hunt has a guy named Warren Whitaker who's also a board member at Music Mountain, which is a nationally beloved chamber music venue that we have here in Falls Village. And he really goes to a very basic level. And I think that all of us are sitting around the house and getting super bored with our music right now. And if you've not been a classical music person, he really gives you a baby steps introduction to how to get to know classical music, and kind of says, don't be embarrassed by liking the things that really sophisticated music lovers kind of turn their noses up at. Like you said, you know, start with the popular stuff. There's a reason why it's so popular.
It was interesting. We have classical music, and we happen to have a great service that if people request what the song was, we can send them not only what the song was, but where they can get the song as well. Because classical music is, and what you see at Music Mountain, we're very lucky to have Music Mountain around here and Hotchkiss, which present unbelievable classical music performances here. And they're either free or dirt cheap compared to elsewhere in the country.
And that's a nice service that you guys are offering, because so often you turn on the music and you hear something super sublime and you just don't know what it is. So that's a great thing to be able to email you and say, like, wow, I'd like to learn more about that piece.
Yeah, technology makes our lives a lot easier sometimes. We'll go to a couple of stories about out of Sharon. First of all, speed bumps in Sharon, and also the food truck plan, which will help local business.
A lot of towns around here are looking into food trucks, and they all seem to have vastly different opinions on whether food trucks are good or bad. And some of it depends on the local vendors in a town and how they feel about competition. So they have not been super popular in Salisbury, where you've had one or two businesses say, like, that's not, you know, that's going to really infringe on our ability to make money at our little restaurant or whatever. In Sharon, where there's the very popular fish truck, Sharon is looking at the possibility of having other food trucks. And, of course, Jump Fest will have food trucks. So I've always thought it'd be super fun to own a food truck. Marcia, you probably remember years ago there was a guy who had the truck that would come with ice cream to the beach in Sharon. And that always seemed like a nice idea, too. So the selectmen discussing the idea of having food trucks and hoping that it will help local businesses. And then Hilltop Road, which is what we sort of know as a rural minor collector, which connects Route 4 to the center of Sharon. A lot of people use it as a shortcut, which is, you know, not really great for the people who own houses there, but also that's where we have the school. So there's a lot of traffic on that road and not a great place for people to be speeding. So they're looking at putting speed bumps or speed humps out and discussing how they can do it to notify people so that they don't go flying over it and wreck their undercarriage.
All right, and a twinge of sadness when I turned the page of the Lakeville Journal this week and I saw the picture of Toymaker's Cafe. I thought, oh, maybe it's coming back, but no, it's about the book and recipes in a new book about the Toymaker's Cafe.
And it could still come back. The news haven't really said it's specifically not, but they, you know, and I have to say, we're lucky that there haven't been that many businesses that we've lost to the quarantine. But they really felt that, you know, there was no way that they could continue to go on. It's very much like eating lunch at your mom's house when you go to Toymakers. Greg Bidoux is a very sort of paternal presence, and Anne is very maternal at the counter. And you go in, and he just makes you a really homemade little sandwich, but not something that really translates to a pandemic model. But they had been talking for years about doing a cookbook, which they've done, and as most people know, especially people who live in that part of town, it's a very popular spot for motorcyclists. And Greg, of course, has a side business on the Internet selling parts to rare old motorcycles, which he keeps on the premises and sort of takes apart and sells to people.
Now, I want to go to the interesting story here, though. This is one thing that the Lakeville Journal does that no other paper does for our area. Focus in on interesting people, and you can do an interesting story that people might not know otherwise. And you've got one such story about the artist who lives here in Northwest Connecticut.
Right, Katra Storm and Lila Hawkins' friend who lives in Sharon had notified her about this and said, oh, there's this interesting guy who's moved up here. And I thought he'd moved up just for the quarantine, but he's been here for a couple of years and doing a lot of portraits and has been invited by some local businesses to do their signage, like the, again, a motorcycle shop down in Kent, and has he's done a lot of sign work there for them. And so just a nice little portrait, which actually, you know, we haven't really been able to do as much, so nice to have that.
And Falls Village, their affordable housing, they're looking for put together a new committee there.
Right, and a lot of conflict there again, and so the town stepping in and creating a town-organized commission to look into that.
And we have the obituary section, and of course, Ed Kirby passed away. We found out this week, and you're going to have a full obituary of that as when Kenny Funeral Home puts it back out, and you'll have that in next week's paper.
Right, and we have a giant tribute story that we're doing to him because everybody's got a story about Ed Kirby. There's just no shortage of memories. He was such an interesting guy with his finger in so many different areas of life up here. Really, in many ways, he was an embodiment of the Northwest Corner.
Now, out of your Millerton News section, you've got a nice story on the Stissing House, how it's closing, but the owners want to remain in the area and look at other options.
Right, and Michelle John and Patricia John, who Patricia's just the loveliest person, and it's a wonderful restaurant, very popular with our sort of Millbrook area diners, but also people from, you know, Litchfield County would go over there. And they did a beautiful job renovating it. There were a lot of challenges with the building, with different owners, and again, you know, just struggling with the pandemic, but they're hoping to open a new place, someplace that might have more of a catering aspect to it, to help them through times like these.
On your opinion page, and Janet, we're gonna. What's great about, and I'm absolutely blown away, but it's a great thing. You know, we can have people call on the radio and do tit for tat, and it gets in. That's one of the poor things that we try to not to get into on the radio. But the amount of letters that I've seen been building in the Lakeville Journal on Twin Lakes, on housing, on history. I mean, that is exactly what a local newspaper can foster, which is people giving ideas. And because it's written down and it's published, it gives people who want to respond to those ideas the impetus to do it over the course of a week and put something together. So, I mean, I just am amazed at the amount of letters and the diverse letters this week.
Yeah, blown away by it because, really, it's just a normal week, and yet there are all these issues that our readers care about deeply, and, you know, they write letters that are well-researched, that are thoughtful, and that are passionate, and so we're so fortunate to have this in our community. We're very happy to have them, so do give all of them a read. As Marshall says, there are some on the Twin Lakes Causeway, the Sharon Playhouse deserving support because their gala was last week, and that is short but sweet and very meaningful letter. Do support them. More on housing history, and those letters really read carefully because it's this is not happening in a vacuum, that we have a discussion about housing in Salisbury and in Fallsville, you know, any of our towns. So do read those letters that share the history because these are people who know what they're talking about. And so we're proud to have them and glad to further the discussion.
And we'll go on to your editorial, which is a sign of the times. When is the time for more affordable housing in Salisbury and Falls Village?
Right. So we discuss sort of where we are now and then certainly make the point that the time has to be now. There's not unlimited time to accomplish having an expanded affordable housing offering in each of these towns because take a look at the Hartford Current this week. Go to their website and look up towns whose properties have increased in price the most, and Salisbury is at the top. It's not a simple thing, and it's not going away. And so these folks who have volunteered to work on the current proposal in Salisbury, and it's been approved in Falls Village, but, you know, much discussion happening still, and we have the new committee forming there. But, boy, we have to come to a conclusion. It's time to move things forward because the possibilities are not endless.
And you know what? We want to keep our rural character, and we want to have people come here and spend weekends and stuff like that. But if we want our rural character to remain the same, we need affordable housing for the people that will own businesses, who work at the fire departments, who work as first responders. It's something that we need in general throughout the area.
Yeah, anybody who lives here full time and needs to live on the wages they make. Housing is becoming more and more out of their reach.
All right. Well, Liz, in the final 3 minutes here, we've got a compass.
We've got a compass, and it's got our romance banner, which is nice ads from area restaurants and florists because Valentine's Day is coming up the same weekend as Jump Fest. A store on Elizabeth Jewelry, which we just did coincidentally with the romance banner, but Elizabeth Jewelry, it's a great time if you're not going out to galas and weddings and things, as we sometimes do at this time of year. Why not bring all your jewelry in and get it cleaned? The Salisbury Library is doing a virtual tour of Monticello. I actually ended up going there in the middle of a snowstorm once many years ago. It's the most fascinating place. An Era of Elegance talk coming up February 6th. A story by a guy called Ed Stillman, who many people know as a Millerton resident. He was a travel agent, which is already sort of quirky and anachronistic in this day and age of internet travel, but he did a wonderful story for us on fantasy travel, you know, as a travel agent, where he'd like to go once the pandemic is over and where you can go, and he'll be writing more for us. And then two exhibits through the Connecticut Historical Society featuring civil rights movement and beautiful photos from Stephen Summerstein, who was a college student at the time of the march on Selma.
And once again, I want to bring people back to the attention, and you both can talk about it, the ski jumps and Jump Fest, and how important this insert that comes out in the Lakeville Journal every year is important, not only to the Lakeville Journal, of course, but to Jump Fest. And I think it's one of those segments that people hold on to this even long after the Jump Fest is over.
That's certainly our hope, and we're so proud to have worked on this for decades. You know, so many people have kept this going in so many ways, and that goes for the ski jumps too. The whole community comes together to make it all happen, and those folks who work on this program, it's the same thing for them as it is for the guys on the hill. It takes a lot of work, and they're all volunteers, so we're proud to be a part of it. Give it a read. There's a lot of history here and a lot of what's happened over the past year and coming into next year with volunteers at SWASA and with everything they have planned for the jumps and that weekend. So I know many of us are really looking forward to this and enjoy it.
All right. Well, that is this week in the Lakeville Journal. Of course, tricornernews.com on the web. Also, we feature, as we did this morning, stories out of the Millerton News as well. And it's available at your house, home delivery, or you can pick it up or on the web. Guys, we will speak to you again next week.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Have a good week.
All right. That is this week in the Lakeville Journal. And once again, you can find them at area newsstands, home delivery, and tricornernews.com. That's the site you can go to and get either the Millerton News or the Lakeville Journal.